The phrase good British food has long been dismissed as an oxymoron in the world press. Tourists tend to visit Britain for theater and history, not for the cuisine. But that is starting to change. The New Yorker magazine claims that the best Italian restaurant in the world is to be found not in Italy, but in London. This week, British Prime Minister John Major claimed credit, as politicians so often seem to, for the fact that Britain's restaurants are packed, frequently with Parisians and New Yorkers, residents of cities renowned for their food. The phenomenon was summed up by Britain's Independent newspaper, which said last week that food is the new cultural currency. NPR's Michael Goldfarb has been dining out off and on in Britain for 3 decades. From London, he files this report.
A blowtorch glazes a construction of mango slices in the kitchen of Aubergine, one of London's hottest restaurants. It's the end of the luncheon sitting. Upstairs, diners, who reserved their tables a month and a half ago, are getting ready to enjoy the finale of a meal prepared by Aubergine's 29-year-old chef, Gordon Ramsay. Ramsay is one of a group of young chefs in Britain on whom the Bible of Gastronomy, France's Michelin guide, has been raining down stars, its highest accolade. Ramsay is an unlikely candidate for Michelin stardom. He began his working life playing for his hometown soccer team, Glasgow Rangers.
I had my first year's contract renewed, and then 3 months into that, I got asked to go. Basically not up to required standards. Could only kick with one foot, being my left foot, and I was devastated.
Determined not to fail again, Ramsay took up a career in catering and decided to make it to the top as a chef. This inevitably meant training in France, so he traipsed off to Paris and got a job, even though his language skills were minimal.
I found myself a cracking French girl who taught me bloody good French. It was never the best French, but it worked.
The chef admits it wasn't an easy apprenticeship.
I got my ass kicked. I got a hard time.
Talking to Ramsay, you get the sense he still has a professional athlete's competitiveness at heart. He endured the hazing of his French apprenticeship and came away with the skills to create extraordinary food not seen or tasted before in London, like his signature dish, a cappuccino of langoustines, which is definitely not a cup of coffee with a crustacean dunked in it. Recognition from Michelin came quickly, but there are many talented young chefs in Britain and the competition among them is fierce. So Ramsay keeps fit and dreams up new food ideas.
I could be, sat in the gym on Sunday afternoon and think of something else to do with lobster and grapefruit juice. It's just a continuous thought.
His daydreams tend toward inventive uses for rich foods like foie gras.
I've just put a new dish on the menu, which is three different foie gras. And one of them is a sauté foie gras, the other one is a pressed terrina foie gras, and the third one is a duck foie gras jelly, which has been infused with Earl Grey tea. And that's served with a small ballantine of foie gras with a very fine celeriac puree.
Now, Earl Grey tea, people would imagine, well, that's a British dish.
Yeah, well, I think I've got to be a bit more patriotic than I have been.
In the Eagle Pub, on the other side of London, Matthew Fort, restaurant critic of the Guardian newspaper, tries to find the right word to describe Ramsay's cuisine.
The thing about Gordon's cooking is that it's very, what I would call, architectural. You get a series of the ingredients layered on top of one another. It's beautifully integrated. It's very well thought through, all his food. And I think that the actual technique of cooking, cooking techniques employed in each one, are done with extraordinary precision.
It's a trifle surreal having this conversation about serious food in Britain. When I was a student here 25 years ago, the food was so dreadful that I lost 14 pounds almost overnight.
I'm very surprised you're still with us if you try to eat at all. If you wanted to eat well in London, you could easily have starved looking around for decent food.
Despite the weight loss, my belt size went out 2 notches because I took all my calories in beer. The pub was my source of nutrition, but it wasn't like the pub we're seated in now. The Eagle is one of dozens of pub restaurants that have sprouted up in recent years. Britain always had a few fine restaurants like Aubergine, top-end quality for a price, but pubs like the Eagle show how far the restaurant revolution has permeated into the ordinary world. Today, the lunch menu at the Eagle includes sea bream cooked over an open grill and pork loin with roasted capers, bay leaf, and garlic served with mashed pumpkin and black beans. You can wash it down with real ale if you like, or wine from Australia, the US, Chile, not to mention France and Italy. Critic Fort says the restaurant boom owes its existence to a social phenomenon of the last decade.
It was the great discovery of Mediterranean cooking, I think, that helped to open up the possibility of what pubs, sort of pub food that pubs could do. In the 80s, when people had a lot more disposable income, people started travelling a great deal more and started heading for the Mediterranean and the sunshine. They then began to discover, the more daring travellers began to discover local ingredients and local foods and began to like it, began to bring things back.
So travel not only broadens the mind, but the palate as well. Between pubs and fine restaurants, there's a huge range of other eateries. London is buzzing like it's the 80s again, and huge designer restaurants, where the interior decor is at least as important as the food, are opening every week. Just when you think the capital has run out of people to pose in them, another one opens and is packed to the rafters. The one place where the food boom hasn't reached is working-class neighborhoods. There are still plenty of places where British food traditionalists can get their grub fried to a sodden gray, barely suitable for eating, but really good for patching up holes in walls. Fort says that despite the persistence of greasy cafeteria food, it's not being chauvinistic to say that London has surpassed Paris as a place for dining out.
You have a huge range of different styles, national styles of cooking, cooked to a very, very high order. And I think it's a simple range of choice, excellence, interest, variety. I think I'd rather eat in London than Paris any day of the week.
And back at Aubergine, Chef Gordon Ramsay, competitive as ever, has set out a new menu in the hopes of gaining his second Michelin star.
I want it, and I want it in a big way. But, yeah, I believe it when I see it, black and white.
The new Michelin ratings come out in January. British food lovers confidently expect a small constellation of stars to be given to British restaurants. I'm Michael Goldfarb in London, calling to see, do you have a table free in January?